Hello, mortals, and welcome to another episode of Geek Like Tendencies. I'm your humble host, Ryan of Asgard, and as always, I am joined by my two esteemed co-hosts. First up, it's none other than...
I'm here, Steven from the House of El. Hello, everyone.
All right, yeah, welcome back, Steven, and newest member of the Geek Like Tendencies, and that is...
As always, it's Curve in the Singular Tribunal. GLT community, let's go.
All right. Yeah, welcome, guys. I think we're all very excited to get into this episode, episode 37 today, folks. And we are going to jump right in, starting with Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Falcon and the Winter Soldier is the, I think it's just actually the second Marvel-based show on Disney Plus after WandaVision. And it has just concluded as of this Friday. And we are going to talk about it right now. As always, we like to let you know up front that there will be spoilers. Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Well, a lot to unpack, but overall thoughts about this show from beginning to end, episode one to the very end. What would you say overall were your feelings about this show? I'm going to start with Curvin, Singular Tribunal.
I thought it was a great show. I think this is another home run for Marvel and for Disney. I think this show was much different than obviously WandaVision, so you really can't compare them. It's apples and oranges, but obviously for the action content, storyline, character development, I really think through and through it was a great show. You know, before getting to all the nuances and the intricacies, just overall excellent show.
I have to agree with that. Steve, do you share those thoughts or no?
For the most part, yes. I think it was a really good show. I think for me, it started off slow the first few episodes for me, like the first maybe half of the season. Again, not much of a season with six episodes, but it's six episodes. And first half for me, like it was a little slow. I didn't have that urge to like, I need to see this the next episode right away like I did with WandaVision. Because with WandaVision, it was more of like... what is going on kind of crazy thing, but it picked up that second half of the season. I was like, wow, now I really need to see the next episode. And I think the last half of the season solidified the show for me. And it was great. It felt more, I want to say, you can't really compare it to WandaVision, but the only thing I could say is that WandaVision did feel like it was a show, and they made it feel like it was a TV show. This felt like it was a movie just chopped up, because it really could have been a separate movie. That's how it felt like to me.
You know, I agree with that. I did feel it was very cinematic. Something about it did give you that feel of it being a movie that just sort of... Yeah, it was split up into the multiple episodes. So that's a great point, Steve. I think overall, I would say that my expectations for this show were tempered at best. I wasn't super excited for it. Just like I could say the same thing about WandaVision. And I would say that this show has exceeded my expectations. I was surprised, pleasantly surprised, that there was more content, it was more related to current events than what I had anticipated. I was kind of also surprised that I felt like they took chances and got their hands dirty, if you will, getting into conversations and topics that are problematic, I think, for any shows, let alone like something like a superhero show around race and the government and the gray areas of things. I would say also the whole idea of like Captain America being like a black or white, no pun intended there, but black or white, right or wrong. He was kind of like down. He wasn't down the middle. You kind of knew he was a good guy, and essentially they're kind of saying like maybe he's kind of antiquated in a way, and they're throwing that out there like, is he or isn't he? Like, what does it mean to be a hero? Really difficult stuff and themes to discuss. So I think they tackled those and did a pretty good job. So, and there's a lot to unpack with this show. But we want to dive in now and talk about some of our favorite moments. And there are probably a lot in there. But Steven from the House of L, let's start with you. Some favorite moments from Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
I would say favorite moments, and but just like favorite, I guess, portrayal, because it was a portrayal that I hate. Like I hated the character, and that was Wyatt Russell portraying John Walker, Captain America. Mm. I think he really stole the show with his portrayal of his of those characters, you know, and what he became, and he really made you want to hate him at all at times. And then you're like trying to see, is there glimpses of good? Is there glimpses of bad? Where is he ending up? And he did a really good job at first. I really like, really, this is the guy that's taking over as Captain America? This guy? Really? They couldn't get someone else? Like, and honestly, I also didn't know who his parents were until I looked them up. I had no idea it was Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn, but yeah. Okay. Acting's in their blood, in his blood, you know? So, other thing is the shock value of seeing Julia Louis-Dreyfus, or maybe if people might not know her as her real name, but maybe as Elaine from Seinfeld showing up as in the MCU.
Did you guys see Seinfeld was in the MCU? That's how people are going to do it.
Yeah, I know. With Jerry? No. Yeah.
Hello, Newman.
Elaine. Yes, Elaine Benes was doing the Elaine dance on with Simo at the club.
That would be funny.
But yes, seeing her in there, I did not expect to see her. That was definitely quiet, I guess. Mm. There was no rumors at all about her showing up in the MCU until after that episode. Everything was like, oh yeah, she was supposed to be, they were supposed to have her in Black Widow, but that got postponed because of, you know, everything else with COVID. So it was great to see her, and I'm really interested to see where they go with her character. Definitely a lot, I guess, is hidden about her. Other thing is the fight on the top of the truck, on the trucks in the second episode. That was pretty awesome. The fight scenes, I think, in the show in general, anytime there was a fight scene, that was they really did great work with that. And Zemo dancing in the club was one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think you make a great point with Elaine, with her character Julia Louis-Dreyfus being in the show. It just sort of underlines or highlights for me Kevin Feige's, how good he is, I think, in his expertise at plucking obscure characters from the comics, and not just using them to great effect, but also choosing actors that we wouldn't expect to play those obscure characters and getting it to work somehow. And he consistently does it, and it consistently surprises us. And that's kind of cool. So, I mean, you don't know that you kind of would want to see that character. If it got leaked, we'd be like, we don't want to see that. But it came out, and we're like, okay, let's see what happens next.
Yeah, so, well, they do that a lot with Marvel. Nobody wanted to see the Guardians of the Galaxy until now. We can't do without Guardians of the Galaxy.
That is true. Favorite moments, Kervin?
Favorite moments for me? The reappearance of the Dora Milaje, I thought that was awesome. Anything having to do with Wakanda was great. So yes. I love the fact when you saw the kimono beads when the Winter Soldier's walking in the streets, and it's like, oh, I know what that is. So it's like, you know, those little Easter eggs. So when you saw that, and then they're talking, and it was interesting because I was watching it with my wife, and it was just like little odds and ends that people mentioned. She was like, do you think he knows how to speak the Wakanda language? And then obviously in maybe a next couple of scenes, he ended up saying something to her and they had the subtitles. I was like, well, I guess there's your answer.
You know, yep.
But obviously, and it was funny because Stephen from the House L just mentioned this, and I didn't think of it until he said it. I didn't like the new Captain America character, but I think that was probably purposeful. So I would have to say that is actually a great thing, because you disliked him greatly. Like, it's like, this guy is a jerk. This is the worst. But you know what? It's like, so I think they were smart enough to know, look, we're going to manipulate the audience. We're going to make them not like this guy, you know? So, and you think you're just doing it on your own, you know, I decided, no, they probably layered him a certain way and presented him a certain way so he would not be likable. And that's exactly how it was. So I would have to say that was a very smart choice on their part. And that was because if you didn't have that distrust or if he didn't have that unlikable quality, it wouldn't have worked as well overall, you know, as far as him being a variable in the show. So that was actually very, very well done. Yes. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, that was awesome. I mean, obviously, as soon as she entered into the very first scene, it was like, oh, and it's like, you know who that is. And that's one of the great things about Marvel is how they take, you know, famous and obscure, you know, actresses or actors. Let's just say actors because it's gender neutral. So just say, you know, famous and obscure actors and place them in these roles. Obviously, we're still waiting to see what they're going to do with Keanu Reeves and whatever future Marvel movie. You know, it's funny because he's one of those few actors that has a blank check. It's like, hey, tell us what you want to do, Keanu. We just want you in there. But having her was great. And I really think she has actually been seen in a different light, not just because of Marvel, but I think over the years, you know, it's hard to break out of those characters like Elaine from Seinfeld. So, but mm-hmm. I think the show Veep really helped her a lot and really helped show her range. So like seeing it now and reflecting on it, excellent choice by Marvel. Obviously the new Falcon outfit as, you know, as Captain America, you were hoping that when the Dora Milaje dropped off that box, or when Winter Soldier actually brought that box to Sam, you were hoping it was going to be that, and it paid off. They did not disappoint. It was awesome, and all the different tricks that he can do, you know, with it. Obviously, there's not just one Red Wing. There's two, so you know, it was mm-hmm. great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to go back to your point about Wyatt Russell. I had seen Wyatt Russell before, and maybe we have all seen him before in different roles, mm-hmm. but didn't know it. Like Steve was saying. But like Black Mirror, I immediately remembered him from Black Mirror, which is an absolutely awesome show if you haven't watched it. But I thought that he was so good, to your point, Kervin, I agree. He was so good at what he was doing that, I mean, you could, even though you disliked him tremendously, at moments you could see him going forward as a heroic character sometimes. Mm-hmm. A virtue of some kind, because he did do some lots of good things for his country, you know, and he wasn't mustache twirling, so it worked.
But even in the end, he tried to make a good choice too.
He did, yeah,
with the truck. So,
and those are best villains, if you will. Those are the best ones, you know.
Well, you know, you compare him to Venom. Venom started out a certain way, and then look at him now.
Yeah. Yep, that's true. Yeah, very great. Great points, really. And of course, all of the Dora Milaje. Always a treat to see them, and hopefully mm-hmm. get to see more, even more of them. Favorite moments for me, there were many. I would say first, just looking back at Falcon flying, I believe it was in episode one. That for me helped to legitimize the character a little bit. I felt like. And we've seen him fly before, but I felt like it was a little bit different. They actually made it look cool. There was something mm-hmm. about it. Mm-hmm. I think Steve mentioned in a previous episode in some of the shots, some of these shots felt like a thrill ride or something, or mm-hmm. being at a theme park or something. Something about the shooting of his scenes made you feel like a man could fly. No, I'm just kidding. But it made you feel like he was a cooler character now. And the little one-liners and exchanges with GSP, George St. Pierre, and stuff like that. I liked that whole scene. So I guess those moments I liked. This was not a fun thing, but the incident with the police when Falcon and Bucky were having their exchange. They were arguing as friends, or maybe not closest of friends, but were having an argument at the time, and for the police to pull up and sort of start berating Falcon, not recognizing who he is and all of that, and just that whole thing of like, you know, well, why should it matter who he is? Why is he being treated that way? And blah, blah, blah. The fact that Disney and Marvel decided to inject that into the show, it gained my respect. I was like, wow, those are difficult things to put into a TV show about superheroes. So great job for them, and kudos to them for doing it. And of course, Isaiah Bradley, I think any moment that he was on screen was really touching, heartbreaking, and fulfilling, I think, when he got to the end. And I feel like they were able to show you lots of things about the government and how, you know, we how people of color were treated, specifically black people in this universe, I guess. But also it showed you the complexities of within culture, you know, the and that, you know, there are different types of viewpoints from different types of people and different black people, and not everyone thinks the same way, you know. And then Falcon had a really difficult decision to make, and he, and I feel in the end, made the right one. And he it wasn't like showing Isaiah Bradley, like, you know, like proving him wrong, but I think he helped to change his mindset, you know, in the end, of like, hey, you know, we can make this work. And I think that was pretty awesome. So,
well,
yeah.
And Isaiah Bradley's experience, you know, and not to take away from it, it jaded him, you know. I think everyone has seen a character like that who's just suffered so much they can no longer see hope. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I can add one more thing that I forgot to mention, even though I mentioned that the first half of the season was a little, you know, slow going for me, I do want to mention that I did like that. What Marvel got to show us was them after the blip, kind of like it was only a few months. If the timing is 6 months after Endgame, I think this is, if I'm correct, right? It's basically, how is Bucky and how is, you know, Falcon dealing after the blip? You know, you see the scene with him and his sister in the bank, and it's like, well, don't you get is Tony Stark not paying you for these hero gigs? And, you know, like the struggles that they're going through, where you've been the last 5 years? And Bucky was like his struggle of like trying to become, I guess, less Winter Soldier-ish and more normal and trying to like live life and be on a date. That was an interesting, I guess, viewpoint to see in the first few episodes that I liked.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, great points. I mean, if we could continue for another 30 minutes talking about favorite moments, because there are just so many.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on a bit from our favorite moments, are there any plot holes or low moments that you all want to address?
I think most people will agree that the reveal of Sharon Carter as the power broker was a low moment. Mm-hmm. I think people wanted more. It may be hard to see what now. I don't think anyone, when you're thinking about Marvel movies and the Disney Plus series, I don't think anyone was thinking, oh, we can't wait to see more of Sharon Carter, you know. And that's not to downplay any female character or actress, because you can put the Black Widow on screen all day, you know, you can put the Dora Milaje on screen all day. Like I love seeing them, but Sharon Carter. And as someone who's supposed to be in the underworld, so powerful and influential as the power broker, that's who you're choosing. And I think there was like little breadcrumbs dropped in the beginning.
Yeah.
It's like she's got, just because, you know, of what happened with Civil War, you're now, you know, disavowed by your government and you're having, you know, kind of run the streets of the black market. Totally makes sense. But now all of a sudden you're this huge underground kingpin, you know, that no one's heard of. And, you know, it's like she was just way too connected. She was way too connected for it to just seem like innocuous or benign, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It felt a bit shoehorned.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had that in my notes too, as something that I was like, I disliked too. I was like, it was a surprise sort of, but also it was a slight disappointment to me. Like, especially with the course that we saw her throughout her scenes and the MCU and the movies and where she comes from, you know, Agent Carter, you know,
mm-hmm.
Peggy, you didn't expect that, you know, you just didn't expect it to be her. I didn't feel like there was like hints towards it. So I guess maybe that's why they turned it, because you didn't expect it, but it just felt so out of place. I felt like, and just wasn't that big of a reveal, or that she didn't seem like the big bad. And I, you know, makes me wonder, other people wonder. There are people out there, if you look online, that are wondering if it's really Sharon Carter or is she a Skrull.
I thought that when we got to the final scene of the final episode, I just for some reason popped into my head, what if she's a Skrull? Because if you go back and watch movies where Sharon Carter is depicted, I feel like this jars with, you know, it doesn't seem to make sense. There's not anything that she's ever done would made you think like, is she really, you know, up to something secretly or whatever? And all of a sudden it all, I don't know, a little bit hard to believe. But at any rate, oh, sorry, Steve, you have something?
I was going to say, it does just make me wonder, and it makes everybody wonder, who is she really talking to on the phone at the end? Mm-hmm. Who's the bigger bad, I guess, that she's talking to, I guess, as her boss? But again, like, also, the reason people are also thinking is, as a Skrull, is like, the last two things we've seen from Marvel at the end of each series or movie has been Skrull related. So it's like, mm-hmm. are they continuing the Skrull thing, or is this not a Skrull? I'm kind of hoping it's a Skrull, because this is kind of weak for me, but is what it is. We know that the show was rewritten because it was supposed to come out earlier. It got rewritten because of the COVID-19 pandemic, of course, because I think the subplot previously was supposed to be about a virus breaking out in certain areas, and that was supposed to be part of a subplot. What I didn't like in the second what we saw in the second episode with what we saw with the truck battle, once Bucky came into the truck, you saw that there was vaccines. The whole truck was full of vaccines, but throughout the rest of the series, they were never mentioned. It was like, what was the vaccines for? So it's like they left some plot points of a vaccine virus in there, but they didn't. There was a plot hole there. What was it for? They didn't never mention what, you know, what was it used for? What do they need vaccines for, really? And that was just a quick 2-second clip of it in a way in a whole 6-episode series. It felt like they might have needed to fix that hole of the virus a little bit better, because I felt like also when we saw Carly back at where she grew up, where the kids, she was playing with the kids, a lot of young kids, poor people and some sick people, that's maybe there was a virus in there. If in the original subplot, I'm just saying I felt like maybe that felt off a little to me.
I think, I'll just add one more just before you jump on, Ryan. And of all the people, no one knows that Sharon Carter is the power broker except for Carly. so of all the people throughout the show, even the bad guys, like, that's the one person you revealed yourself to. So I think that's a plot hole as well.
Oh, she brought her in, right? Or she something like that, right?
We shall see. I definitely I wouldn't be surprised if she were a Skrull, especially making the comment about the access to the government files and all that. Mm-hmm. It immediately made me think that, you know, it's a possibility, but it remains to be seen what they'll do going forward. We'll see. But more work for Emily Van Camp. All right. So it is ratings time. Kervin, let's start with you, Singular Tribunal, sir.
I will give it 5 geeks out of 5. I thought it was highly entertaining. I look forward to watching it every week, just like with WandaVision. And, you know, I'm hoping I don't even think it's worth hoping. I believe Loki is going to do similar numbers and hold similar interest. But I give it 5 out of 5. It was very entertaining.
All right. I am going to say for me, I'm going to say 4 out of 5. I found it very entertaining, very more thought-provoking than what I was even expecting. But I can't say I was as excited every week to see Falcon and the Winter Soldier as I was for WandaVision, for instance. So for me, 4 out of 5, very strong showing again. I would recommend anyone to watch if you haven't. It is a great show and probably easier to get on board and watch than WandaVision. Steve.
All right. So, how many geeks am I going to be sending to the couch to watch?
To Falcon, your couch. Pull out bed. Couch. Futon. I'm going to...
The bean bag. Oh, God. I'm going to send out 4.3 geeks out of 5.
All right, let me get my calculator.
4.3. Yeah. Why 4.3? Forget it. It's just a number out there. It's a little bit above four, a little bit under 4.5, somewhere in there. You know, I said my issues. You know, it was a little slow to start with in the first half of the season, but it ended really well. There were the plot holes that we mentioned, and it just the big reveals weren't as like other than Julia Louis-Dreyfus to me. The way it ended, I'm hopeful for maybe the way it ended. There could be a season two. Not sure if they're gonna do a season two. They are working on Captain America 4. So are we gonna have could we have a season two before or after, or is Captain America 4 gonna be a continuation from here? We don't know, but it overall was a good watch. Go see it. And MCU hasn't done anything wrong really, well, lately in the last several years, but it was definitely a good continuation from the end game. I can't say from WandaVision because it's separate. There was no connection, but it was a good continuation from Endgame. And it actually made me like Falcon and Winter Soldier's character more. I liked Winter Soldier, but it made me like the Falcon's character even more than before. I didn't really care for him prior to this.
Yeah, great points. They did a good job with character development in the show. That's a good point that we might have missed. Yep. All right, guys, so we're moving on from Falcon and Winter Soldier. Great show, but you know what might be a little bit even better, arguably, controversially? Invincible. Invincible is found on Amazon Prime, folks. If you haven't heard about it yet, well, we're going to tell you about it. It is well into its first season. It is an animated show based on it's a comic series from Image Comics, so not Marvel and not DC. All right, but we are going to dive right in here and talk about it, about our overall thoughts regarding Invincible, which is a week away from its season finale of season one. So let me see here. I'm going to choose Steven from the House of L for your overall thoughts about Invincible.
So, as Ryan of Asgard said, if you haven't heard from it, I want to say Amazon hasn't done really a great job of promoting it, I think. I feel like, unless you're like on their Fire Stick maybe or whatever, and you see a little line, but there's no commercials. I haven't seen any commercials as of yet, and we're a week away as of this recording to the finale of the first season, hopefully, because I hope it continues, because, damn, as Ron Simmons says, damn, this is...
Another deep cut
for those out in the, you know, the I can't even come up with the words for our audience and those out there, you know, that are listening. Please explain who Ron Simmons is.
Well, listen, before you explain who he is, we do what it says on the we do what it says on the tin. Okay, like, you're gonna get your money's worth. It says geek like tendencies. Well, there you have it.
Listen, Steven. It's just a little preview of what's coming later, right? But yes, Ron Simmons, go back, look at his first was it black world heavyweight champion in wrestling, if I'm correct, in WCW. Go look him up. But in WWE, his tagline is, damn!
Yep. Enough said.
So back to what I was saying. Okay. Invincible on Amazon Prime has been an incredible show. As you know, to me, as Ryan mentioned, every week, it's a show that I'm like waiting to watch. It's like, that's the itch that I had for this show. Like I did with WandaVision, that I didn't have for for Falcon Winter Soldier. Falcon Winter Soldier and Invincible started around the same time frame, and I was like, I'll watch Falcon Winter Soldier after I watch Invincible. That's how I felt like, and I didn't expect that. And it to me, I just watched that one trailer and I didn't know what to expect, but it's been a great show. The voice actors are amazing. I think. For the roles that the actors that were chosen for these cartoon roles, they did it perfectly. I you know, you see, you kind of, yes, there are some voice actors like I'm sorry, I keep thinking J. Jonah Jameson, but it's, what's his real name? If you guys can help me out there, I'm brain farting.
J.K. Simmons. Yes, J.K. Simmons. Simmons. Yep.
You see his face, but even in the cartoon, like. It's perfect voice acting, I think. Yes. Also, I think because The cartoon character still kind of reminds me of J. Jonah Jameson from the 90s Spider-Man a little bit. But you know, go take a look at that. To me, it's like a mix of a family cartoon superhero mixed with the Amazon Prime The Boys show in one. I don't know if other people feel like it's that mix, but it is. It's got gore, it's got blood, it's got killing, it got superhero stuff. It's got everything that you can think of on The Boys and the cartoon series. And next week's the finale, and I just can't wait for it, honestly. That's my overall. Like, damn. Sorry. I ain't paying WWE, and I ain't paying Ron Simmons. I don't see no trademarks anywhere.
Okay, well, I'm going to share my overall thoughts about this show. Some of these things you might hear are repetitive, but we can't praise it enough. I think just overall incredible execution, just as a work, you know. Everything is seamlessly fitting together in this show. The writing and dialogue, whoever has written this show, I think is very natural. And, for an animated show to sound like it, you know, like the way people talk every day, it's kind of tough. Sometimes it doesn't really work, or they overdo it or whatever. And I feel like this is pretty natural. So that's the first thing that I notice as someone who likes to write. Another thing, the fight scenes are awesome. It's not like the scenes where people are talking, the dialogue are interesting, and then the fight scenes fall off. I think the fight scenes are amazing. Also, the fight scenes don't overshadow the dialogue. When people are talking, I'm as interested personally as to what they're saying. I want to know more. I'm interested in everything that's going on. So I think everything fits seamlessly together. The score and the music's incredible, in my opinion. I think, mm-hmm. you know, it really stands out. With the artists that they choose. A lot of them I make, some I'm familiar with and some I'm not, but the music selection is great. And Steve already talked about the stellar voice actors in this. You will know more than five actors who voice characters in this show for sure. And you'll probably be surprised.
Sandra Oh is one of them.
Sandra Oh, Zazie Beetz. You mentioned J.K. Simmons. So many faces that we know. If you actually look up the faces, but maybe their voices you would recognize. So those are my overall thoughts. Kirvin, your overall thoughts.
Overall thoughts. I share the same sentiments as you guys. It's a great show. So I watch a lot of animation and anime. So, you know, when you're watching an animated show, especially a new one, you know, and this is a new property since it's season one, does it have, you know, great animation? Check. Does it have a great storyline that's going to keep you, you know, coming back for more? Check. Voice actors, they've got excellent comedic actors in this show. So, you know, one of my favorites, and it's a voice that always stands out. Like I can have my eyes closed sleeping, and if I heard this voice, I would know exactly who it is. So it's Jason Mantzoukas, who plays Rex Splode.
Yes.
So obviously you would know him from you would know him from different movies. I know he did a movie, The House. He Big Mouth, that animated show on Netflix. You've seen him in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He was on a number of episodes as Rosa's boyfriend. So I just love him. Anytime he's in something, he always acts completely insane, and his voice is just great. So I think he does a great job. Like I can listen to his dialogue and commentary all day long because it's just all over the place, and it brings that chaotic element into any scene that he's involved in. But I think one thing that for the more mature audiences, and not saying like rated R, but it's nice to not have a kiddie styled animated show. So when you do see, and you talk about all the time, especially with superheroes, like, and you saw it a little bit, actually, if you were talking live action, when you're talking about the Snyder cut for Justice League, if Wonder Woman was to hit someone, their head is going to split open like, you know, like a cantaloupe once it hits the wall. And you see that kind of things, you know, animated in this show. You know, you're seeing brains, you're seeing people just ripped in half, like if they were pieces of spaghetti. It's all, there's all types of crazy stuff, but these are overpowered, you know, superhumans. And that's exactly how it would play out. Like something that used to always, like you talk about, get under my skin and be a pet peeve is the old animated X-Men cartoons where every time Wolverine was on screen and he's fighting someone, it's always a robot. It's always a exactly. robot because, you know, if he puts those adamantium claws in a person, it's game over.
Yeah, he's always like, and then, it's a robot.
That's so true. That's why we couldn't wait for Logan. Logan was the first time we actually got to see him do his thing.
Great point. That is true. I forgot about that. Still a great show, but yep. Dang it. Yeah, and before we move on to the next point here, I do want to say, just do a quick, like, 30-second rundown of if people are listening, like, oh, this show sounds interesting, I might check it out. I didn't mention Invincible, the character is played, Mark Grayson is the name of the character that goes by Invincible, but played by Steven Yeun, who is fantastic in that role. But you got Mark Hamill in this, you got Seth Rogen in this, you have got Zachary Quinto in this show, you got Mahershala Ali in this show, Lauren Cohen, I mean, Jaimin Hansu, it's exhausting. I'm not going to go through
it. It just goes on and on.
Absolutely yeah. ridiculous. I would love to know how they got all these wonderful actors in the show, but it is great. Check it out. All right, we need to go back.
They'll tell you in Hollywood that voiceover acting is easy money. Like, actors look forward. Yeah, yeah. These are like, you know, it's like, hey, yes, I want to do this drama. Hey, can you find me an animated, you know, Disney or Pixar movie to be in? And where are some voiceover roles I can do? It's just easy money. You can do it anywhere.
This is true. Steven from the House of L.
Yes. What's the question?
I'm sorry, Steven from the House of L.
Stick to the format, Ryan. Stick to the format. Yes.
Did we already?
My overall thoughts already happened.
Steven from the House of L. Your favorite moments from Invincible so far?
Other than the fight scenes. Again, I keep saying the fight scenes. Last show we talked about fight scenes. This Invincible. The animated fight scenes, the ripping apart, the gore, necessary things that you need to see in the superheroes is great. But one of my favorite scenes or part of the show is Omni-Man killing the bootleg Justice League / the Guardians. The way that fight happened, damn. Again, sorry, Ron Simmons. But no, I got to stop using that. I'll just say, yeah, wow. But I think the character development that we see, the family development that we see is also a favorite part of mine there. But overall, like, I'm just so interested in the whole story of where it's going. I want to know more about Omni-Man in a way. I think to me overall the whole show is great. That part stands out to me because it's just amazing what they did with the Guardians, but the whole thing is a favorite of mine. The whole series, the whole show, just nothing really big stands out other than the whole thing.
If I had to name a favorite fight scene specifically, I would say it's the one with Battle Beast when he beat the hell out of Invincible and the rest of that group. Like, yes. That guy, like, when you're talking about, okay, well, who can take on Omni-Man or one of the really strong, like, this, that's the guy, you know.
I do want to see a battle between him and Omni-Man. Woo.
Yeah, I almost felt with the fight with Battle Beast was, I mean, I felt like he was fighting normally and he just kind of like stepped up a little bit and easily walked through them to the point where like you felt like is someone gonna die here because like is a lead character gonna die? Wait, how many episodes? Like, you start wondering because it's quite a beating, like what Kervin said. I agree with Steve in your sentiments regarding favorite moments. It's hard to kind of pick one because the show is so sort of well balanced. But I'm gonna go with Omni-Man destroying the planet, an alien planet, not Earth. But that scene, I mean, what Steve mentioned, you know, him fighting the whole superhero team, who in and of themselves are ridiculously powerful. That was awesome too. But there was something different about him destroying a whole planet like that. We've mentioned the similarities to like a Superman or any Superman analog, really. You know, any caped flying superhero really is going to get compared to Superman, that, you know, if they have strength and blah blah blah. But seeing him just like how would that happen? And he kind of shows you how it would happen, you know, where he just absolutely annihilates the civilization because he's had enough of them, basically. And I thought it was kind of funny and like awesome at the same time. You know, I don't mean that in a bad way, like, you know, against the aliens, like, it's all good, sorry about that, but like, that was pretty cool. But yeah, overall, there, all the scenes are favorites because it's great. Steven, Kervin, did you want to say your favorite moment? I know you just gave us a different moment, but your favorite moment, did you have one?
Well, that was my favorite fight scene. I don't think I've had a favorite moment, so to speak, because again, I really think there isn't highs and lows in this show. I think it's very even. It keeps a very steady pace of interest and momentum and everything else like that. So, you know, the whole ride has been excellent. You know, I've enjoyed it all.
All right. Well, does anyone have any low moments so far for Invincible?
Teenage love stories.
Teenage love stories. Okay. I
guess that's the only thing for me. I was like, all right, move on from that already. But other than that, that's the only low point. Other than that, I'm fine with everything else.
See, yeah. I'd have to disagree because I thought that was a good component of it, because he's trying to show this balance. And in this last episode that obviously just aired for the first time on Friday, the last episode, it was interesting to have just a very small twist where he's disappointing his girlfriend over and over by leaving and disappearing and all these other things. And then when he finally comes out and tells her, it's like, look, I have to tell her who I am. I'm going to lose her. Comes out and tells her. And she's like, look, I've known the whole time. I was just wondering when you were going to stop lying to me. Like that that's real. I like that a lot.
Well, I think
there's also another love story triangle thing happening. And the other girl with her man. And it's like, stick with one love story, teenage love story, I feel like.
Well, I think that to Kervin's point, I agree that I like what they're doing with Invincible's character, Mark Grayson, and his, you know, he doesn't know if he's coming or going with relationships yet, and he doesn't exactly know if he's coming or going with his powers just yet. And it is very coming of age, a little bit hints of a Peter Parker sometimes, maybe, you know, but a lot of this stuff we have seen before. If you've read a comic book, if you watched a comic book based show or movie, you've seen it before. I think what's new is that they know that and they're not preaching to the choir. And even the scene that Kervin highlights is a good example of that. You know, we've seen, how many times have we seen like Clark deciding when to tell Lois or whatever, or this character deciding when to tell that character, but they did it in a different way of like, we all know it's going to happen, but we're kind of like, come on, man, do it. Like, come on, you should have done it before and this and that. And then it's like, oh, she already knew. Yeah, she is pretty smart. Like, so I think they're doing a good job, again, balancing the fact that he is a kid at the end of the day. And that's like his biggest weakness, I think. You know, he might be super powerful, but he's a kid. Many times he's like, oh yeah, I helped them yesterday, I don't feel like helping them today. And some another character is like, no, you're a hero, you're supposed to be helping them, you know, you're supposed to do this, you have powers. It's not like, you know, Peter Parker or a Captain America is like, I should be doing this, I know, blah blah blah. It's a little bit different and it's modern. So I think they have to do that. And the love stories, I mean, that comes, it's par for the course, right, with the age and the awkwardness and everything.
Yeah.
So I think they're doing a pretty good job so far. And listen, segue, I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5 so far after not seeing the finale, which is about to come, which, boy, oh boy, that finale is going to be something else. But 5 out of 5 is what I would give Invincible so far. Kervin, your rating so far?
Okay, so this is going to send you to the Lazy Boy. So another thing that you can sleep in, but also watch TV. So I also give it 5 geeks out of 5. And fun fact, Justin Roiland, co-creator of Rick and Morty, did play a character in one of the episodes as well. So I like to see what people. Yeah, right. I like to see that.
All right, and Steven from the House of L, you're ready for Invincible.
As of this moment, since the finale hasn't come out, so up to this, what we've seen from the season, I'm going to send 5 geeks to the floor to watch the the rest, the whole the series floor. Out of five. Four. They're going to sit on the floor or lay on the floor and watch it. Five out of five. Five geeks are being sent there.
Okay. All right, folks. Invincible. Check it out. All right, we're moving on here. And, you know, you can't have a geek-like tendency show without talking about wrestling, professional wrestling, that is. And then today we're talking a little bit about the WWE. And another thing you might not know, I didn't know, there's some WWE shows that are worthy of your time, people. Stephen from the House of L, let's start off with you. Give us a little bit of background and information about what A&E, the network, is doing with these WWE biographies.
Yeah, surprisingly, these shows are not on the WWE Network or on Peacock, whatever the WWE is on right now. But yes, on A&E, they have come out with two WWE shows. One biography, basically, is going to take eight wrestlers from the past and do a biography of these certain wrestlers. Yes, there's going to be eight episodes this season. They already had their first episode last week. The first one was the one and only Stone Cold Steve Austin. And it was one of the best biographies.
That's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so. I had to get that in there.
Austin 316 said, "I would just whoop your ass."
I would have to say that was a terrible Texas.
What? What?
I don't know if anybody else knows what other wrestlers are going to be shown on the biography, but this week, as when we're recording, the second episode is going to be the one and only Roddy Piper. And then the rest of the season, they're going to have Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Booker T, Macho Man, Randy Savage, Ultimate Warrior, and Mick Foley. To run down the whole first season of the biography. I don't know if there's going to be multiple seasons, but this is basically the eight episodes that they're going to have. And if any of those are going to be as good as Austin, it's going to be great 8 weeks of biographies to watch. I don't know if you guys have caught them.
I actually watched half of it last night. I didn't know that these that's something the audience needs to know. These A&E biographies are 2 hours, so I invested an hour last night into watching the first part for this Stone Cold Steve Austin one. Anytime you're watching like a biography or even a documentary, you know, that has been done several times or about, you know, popular characters or topics, I say, you know, the way to measure it is, did you walk away learning something you didn't know previously, especially if you're a fan of whatever subject matter you're watching? And there was a couple of items that I did not know about Stone Cold. Like, I really didn't know. I knew Stone Cold's origin of him once he got to the part of getting into ECW and then his transition to WCW and then onto I knew that. I didn't know his origin of him growing up, where he actually learned to wrestle. Yes. Because if you're talking about coming from that generation and that era that grew up in like 80s, 90s wrestling, you knew all the origins. You knew all the farm teams and like, you know, the little small town, you know, wrestling camps where wrestlers were grown. Like, I still remember watching a biography a long time ago, and John Cena was, you know, an up and comer. And of all the people that, you know, and this is before he got to WWE, of all the people there, you could easily point him out and be like, this guy's going to be a star. And obviously he did, you know,
still rising.
But for Stone Cold, I was surprised. I didn't know all of the information about how he injured his neck. So even watching it and being a fan at the time when he suffered that injury, I didn't. And it's weird how it was actually not weird, but it was really interesting how they detailed the physical effects that he was suffering when that injury happened in the ring. And then when you show the video and he's describing, he was like, I couldn't feel my legs. I'm actually dragging my leg at this point. And I couldn't use my fingers because I had no sensation. So I had to crawl on my forearms, and you see it, you're like, holy crap. You know, obviously seeing it live when it happened in real time at that specific moment, you would never have noticed those things. That's like, that is like a superhuman professional, you know?
Couldn't believe he finished that match, but
God!
I've seen multiple biographies on Austin, and this definitely, like you said, if you've learned more from watching another biography, then they did its job, and I learned more from this biography, and I expect to learn more from the other wrestlers that they're doing biographies on in the next several weeks.
Another interesting thing, just for me to jump in real quick, mm-hmm. is that Mick Foley is obviously in this biography, and it just shows, you know, again, for wrestling fans, how long Mick Foley was in the business, because he talks about sitting in like the crow's nest for wrestlers and their families, watching Steve Austin when he first, you know, started doing training camps before he started wrestling. So it's like, is Mick Foley immortal? How long has he been alive?
Man, he's wrestling Santa. The other show that's on A&E that starts right after the biography, is this one's an hour long, just to let you know. It's WWE's Most Wanted Treasures. It's basically taking WWE wrestlers to find or get the memorabilia and bring it back to the WWE warehouse. Like, the first episode had Mick Foley, and it seems, and he went to go look for his flannel as a Cactus Jack, the original Mankind shirt that he wore in WWE, and one of the original Sockos. So it's like memorabilia that WWE like let go, they threw it out in the audience or got let go in the auction. So they're sending out wrestlers to go find them. Like, there's going to be upcoming episodes of Undertaker and Kane going to hunt for stuff, Booker T, Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair. So it'll be interesting to see what they get to find and what character, you know, it's interesting to see, I guess, what they're going to build to. And to me, it seems like they're going to be building to either a museum or an actual Hall of Fame building, because there is a WWE Hall of Fame, but there's no actual place to go see a Hall of Fame for the WWE. So hopefully that's what Triple H and Stephanie are working on, because Vince has always been against an actual physical Hall of Fame.
All right. Well, if you are a fan of WWE shows, you're in the geek-like tendencies community, the capacity crowd, you need to check out this A&E biography and WWE's Most Wanted Treasures. Check them out. All right. You get a seal of approval from Steven from the House of Avell, Stone Cold Steve Austin, apparently, and Kervin. All right. So moving on. Speaking of fatalities that I might do on certain members of the show, moving on. Now, the next topic here we want to discuss is, well, folks, the content has been flying out of our TVs these days. Every day there's something else new that's coming out that sends us to the couch. Well, there's another thing to check out. You could go to the couch or to the theater, depending on where you live, to see... Or the floor, if you're Steve, to see Mortal Kombat. Or Mortal Kombat. Yes, Mortal Kombat, the newest. That was me wanting to scream and then remembering that I would probably burst the eardrums of the listeners. So I couldn't scream Mortal Kombat. Imagine it. Imagine the older version of that. But Mortal Kombat, the newest iteration of this property, well known for its exploits in the video game world. This is where it started. Hopefully, if you're listening to this show, you will have heard of Mortal Kombat, but hey, it's possible that, you know, you're a newer person to it, and it started out as a one-on-one fighting game, very controversial for its time, and ultimately the fatalities are probably what Mortal Kombat is best known for in the
finish him.
Yes, in the populace, I guess you could say. Those fatalities have become legendary. So that takes us to our overall thoughts about Mortal Kombat. Steven from the House of L, I know from our years knowing one another that you are quite the fan of Mortal Kombat. So I'm going to start with you first. What are some of your overall thoughts about the film?
Yes, I am a big fan of Mortal Kombat, the video games, and also the iterations of it on the big screen and small screen, if you want to say. Overall, I thought this was a fun movie. There's a lot of action. There's a lot of one-liners that you kind of they had to fill in from, you know, the quick one-liners that we know from the video games. There's lots of gore, and there's a lot of fatalities. Yes, they really blurred the lines of it being an NC-17 right up at the edge of rated R, as they said they were going with this movie. I thought the visuals, the graphics, the costumes, the looks were amazing. I have to say, one of the characters that one of the actors, Makad Brooks, sorry, I can't pronounce his name, Makad Brooks, he played as Jax. That I had to like take a double take. It was a surprise because, dude, he was jacked beefed up for that movie. Yeah. He did. I didn't recognize him at first because I last saw him was on Supergirl, and he was Jimmy Olsen on Supergirl, like, you know, tall, skinny guy. He was bulking up in the last couple seasons that he was on there because he was became, I think, the Guardian. But, dude, he was huge here. But yeah, it was a fun movie. I have to say, it was a fun. Just sit back and enjoy your popcorn and just be in awe of what you see on the screen.
Kervin, your initial thoughts, overall thoughts about Mortal Kombat?
Well, needless to say, I was extremely disappointed. I had high hopes and high expectations for Mortal Kombat, and it did not, live up to those. So for those who listen and believe that I give everything 5 out of 5, I will not be doing that this time around. With as much source material that Mortal Kombat has, you know, the whole franchise, video games, previous movies and television series, there's no reason why a competent, writer and director couldn't put together a good story, even though it's based off a comic book, because I don't know why people seem to think that's a kiss of death. I mean, not comic book, but a video game. Mm-hmm. If something's based off a video game, it's not going to be good. I think people who've played Mortal Kombat over the years know how in-depth the background and characters are, and just the whole storyline. No, there's a lot to work with. It's not something that is so razor thin that it's like you're creating things out of thin air. And I just felt like overall it wasn't as good as I hoped it would be for a property that I do enjoy.
Wow. There's so many different directions to go in regarding overall thoughts. But I'll say this. I'm not as big of a Mortal Kombat fan as I am like something like Street Fighter back in the day. But I was very interested in watching this movie because of the fact that I didn't know a lot about the storylines, exactly what Kervin was talking about. And I felt that since we're getting this Mortal Kombat movie in 2021, I expected to have these characters more fleshed out. To get a better idea of like the background, because I really don't know that at all. And I must say I was also disappointed, but I also agree with Steven from the House of L that it was a fun movie. I think they were going for that. At certain parts of the film, I feel like I'm kind of giving a review, so I need to stop. But at certain parts of the film made me think of films from yesteryear, the late 80s, the early 90s, very, very cheesy movies that were leaned on the action. The dialogue was kind of bad, but like you were waiting for the next fight scene. I got that feeling from this. And after a while, I kind of just like, I'm going to temper my expectations because it's just not what I was expecting. I'm glad I didn't go to the theater to watch it, to be quite frank. So those are my overall thoughts. But with that being said, talking about there being moments in it, let's talk about favorite moments. And I'm going to start with Steven from the House of L. Favorite moments from Mortal Kombat?
To me, it was the fatalities. To see all the characters' fatalities that you've seen in video games, to show up in a movie, even though we've seen it in previous versions of Mortal Kombat movies, just the visuals, the way how technology has made things better, and to see, the video, even the present day video games of the next gen systems, to see them on the big screen or your TV screen, they looked amazing. Kano pulling out the heart from quote unquote Reptile was a pretty fun moment. Even though I don't like how they presented Reptile, but is what it is.
Velociraptor.
whatever it was, get your reptiles out there. And it just wasn't the Jurassic Reptile. Park.
if the audience didn't catch that.
Welcome to Jurassic Park. Spared no expense.
The Sub-Zero, I think, was amazing. The fights in general were great. the comedy component at times when they were going off on Kano at that table was hilarious to me. That was one of my favorite moments also. With Kung Lao and him and Liu Kang, it was funny. I like that moment. And I guess the Sub-Zero, anytime he was on screen stole the scene to me. I wish there was more of the fight between Scorpion / Sub-Zero, if it was really a Scorpion only Sub-Zero fight. But I wanted to see more of that. And the beginning, the first 7 minutes. The beginning of the movie was stood out. And I think we'll hear about that again in a minute or two. But that's what stood out for me.
Less than a minute, Steve, because I am going to say right now, my favorite moments are going to be quick, brief. I would say the first 7 minutes were the best 7 minutes. To me, those were, because you got development, plot development, character development. You got action, you got violence, and you got a really touching sort of foundation that they set up with the story, and I don't know what the heck happened after that. So fatality. They killed themselves with this movie. I think it is fatality to themselves. I was just like, but Sub-Zero, great in my opinion. I liked him. I liked the character. They could have done more with him. But if I'm choosing like a character, although I'm supposed to choose a moment, I'm gonna say character. He was my favorite. When he was on screen, I was interested. Although, when you talk about the game, I like Scorpion. I didn't, after that first 7 minutes, I didn't get much, Scorpion, unfortunately. So Sub-Zero and Kano. Kano was a standout for the comedy and comic relief. So that worked, I thought, better than it had any right to. It kind of worked. So those are my favorite moments. Kervin, yours.
See, I'm going to go in a whole nother direction. My favorite moments were this first 7 minutes.
I like what you did there.
And it's interesting because those first 7 minutes obviously showed up on YouTube, where it was like, oh, you can see the first 7 minutes of Mortal Kombat. And, and maybe that was just a marketing strategy to get people to watch it and get the numbers up, because, again, it was the best part of the movie. As far as storyline goes, as far as characters, Kano was the best part of the movie for me. And second was Sub-Zero, because Sub-Zero started off strong in his scenes in the beginning. But then when it got to the end, especially the final fight scene, I didn't think it was that great. The Sonya Blade character I thought was weak. The choice of actor and Makai Brooks as Jax, I thought was a poor choice. I don't think they did enough. They made Louis Tan's character of Cole Young. I thought he didn't seem as developed and as layered as some of the other characters were. Mm-hmm. I think there could have been a lot more they could have done with him. And I'm gonna connect, plot holes and low moments. I don't think they did a very good job of even explaining his lineage, because if he's a distant relative, of Scorpion, why are they not showing that lineage and that heritage? Like, well, Sub-Zero's daughter, who Raiden, rescued and brought and kept safe. Well, obviously you're keeping her safe, so obviously all of her offspring and so on and so forth. But he ends up being an orphan, and he doesn't know where, his parents are and what his family, his line or lineage is. I just thought that was weak. There was so much left unexplained. And obviously, as the name of the movie goes, you never got to see the actual Mortal Kombat. the tournament did not take place in the movie.
That's true. God. I will jump in with my plot holes. And plot holes. Forget plot holes. I'm just gonna say Mortal Kombat. That is the plot. To me, it's just the low moment was, most of the, after the 7 minutes, that was the low moment, because I really was disappointed with what I got. I was very excited to see this. So to talk about plot holes would take another two or three episodes, I think. There were just so many questions that I had, and I'm not going to bore you all with that. So, Stephen from the House of L, for your plot holes and low moments.
Oh, boy. You know, yes, there was no Mortal Kombat. There was no tournament, as they kept trying to mention and talk about in the movie. And I'm like, so why not make this the prequel to the Mortal Kombat? Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. You have a story. Like, yeah. I honestly, I was very excited for this movie. The trailers looked great. I was really, you know, hoping. I had big expectations for this. And yes, it was just an okay, fun movie. And again, it's a video game movie that failed. Another video game movie that failed to be a movie. Hopefully things change in the future. The plot holes is like, if you want to start out, I have several. But like, you know, we don't know how Sub-Zero got his powers in the beginning of the movie. He has powers, but the guy that kills, that becomes Scorpion, doesn't have powers. Like, where'd that come from? You know, where did he go after that? To become Sub-Zero with Shang Tsung. Why was Scorpion the one that got taken away? Like, there was no, like, rhyme or reason for that. The story was weak. The acting was weak. Cole's character is not a video game character. Everybody's like, where is he in Mortal Kombat? Where is he in Mortal Kombat? Guys, look it up. He was written for the movie, and the parts that were written for him, his character, the only move really... I guess character that has character development is so bad and weak in the movie. Mm-hmm. I don't get it. You wrote this character for the movie and it was bad. The editing was choppy. There were parts. The one scene where I'm like, what the hell is going on here? is you see Sonya talking to Cole Young. But you don't see her lips moving. The audio, you hear her, and I'm like, what the hell happened here? She turns around, and it's about like, and she's, and Cole Young's like, you're going to give him $3 million. She turns around, and he's like, it's supposed to, and she's supposed to say, no, but the lips don't move. And I'm like, what the hell?
I was wondering also why. Certain characters always have like, I mean, I feel like she had her like utility belt or whatever and gloves on the whole movie, like even when they're eating. I was like, now explain to me why you need to have that on. I don't know,
because it's the video game outfit. They only have one outfit.
That's kind of ridiculous.
Unless you go to the select screen and change the outfit, but but you know, like we mentioned, though, tournament. A couple characters that they chose, like you know, Kerry mentioned. There was a couple characters that I didn't even. I'm a Mortal Kombat fan. I didn't even know who the hell they were. Like Nitara and Riko, whatever, the guy with the hammer. I thought Nitara was Sindel at first when they showed her, and I'm like, who the hell are these? I'm like, oh, I didn't play Mortal Kombat 4 or Mortal Kombat or whatever, or Annihilation, whatever it was. I was like, yeah, nobody cares about these. And two big ones, Shang Tsung. To me, was weak in this movie.
Yes, I completely agree. Correct.
I agree.
She was so weak in this movie compared to the original Mortal Kombat movie in the 90s. It was just like, really?
Yeah.
This is the guy that's supposed to be the baddie, and one of the weakest parts to me was Goro. Like, it's their you bring him out, the champion, and he gets defeated by a guy that finally gets his bodysuit power in 2 seconds. Like, this is the champion. This is the guy in Mortal Kombat games that freaking, it was difficult to beat, was the last guy. Like, he was a champion in the Mortal Kombat movie. Like, he got defeated in 2 seconds, really. Like, really?
They didn't do a good job with that either. But we move on, we must. Because,
and that was my whole thing on
plot
that.
Hole the movie, aka Mortal Kombat. There's a lot to talk about there. It wasn't that. You know, but let's go ahead to ratings, because maybe, you know, we give it a favorable one. Let's see. Kervin, let's see what you rate this. I throw it over to you for your review.
Well, no big surprise here. I'm giving this 3 out of 5 geeks. Do not watch this in your bed. Be in an upright chair just in case if you fall over, it'll wake you up when you hit the floor. So yeah, there's not much to say about this one. Like, I would not pay to see this in a movie theater. If, you know, thankfully I already had HBO Max, and I got that mainly for the Snyder Cut. So this was just a happy bonus of having HBO Max. I would not pay to see this movie.
Okay, I'll give my rating. Psh, ooh. Fatality. Ryan of Asgard gives this 2 out of 5 stars.
Ooh.
All right, Steve.
Damn. All right. So I like the tease at the end of the movie. So that, and hopefully that leads to sequels. I do want to see sequels. I actually want to see the Mortal Kombat tournament. But how many geeks am I sending to go see this movie? Don't go to a movie theater. If things were different, I would have went to a movie theater. I'm glad I didn't. Also, but I think it's a fun watch. Go, sit down, turn off your brain, and just watch the movie. It's fun. It's okay. Would I watch it again? Yeah, maybe right before this, if the sequel comes out, I'll watch it again just to see all the fatalities and the fight scenes. So my rating, it would be 2.75 geeks out of 5.
What is this, the GPA? What's going on?
Pi Day was... No, I'm just kidding. But what the heck?
Listen.
I wasn't good at math, Ken.
It wasn't 4.3.
Mortal Kombat is not getting into an Ivy League university.
2.145.
What I want to say is, we mentioned they... Previous games might not have had, like, original games might not have had the best stories, but the newer Mortal Kombat games, they could have taken that story and fleshed it out. I felt like there was more character development and better story in the YouTube web series of 2 seasons of Mortal Kombat show in the early 2010s than we got in this movie of a character development. If anybody knows what I'm talking about, know what I'm talking about, go look it up and find it. I think it's like, I forgot the name of it, but go look it up and find it. That web series was good. I think Michael J. White, Michael Jaleel, whatever his name is.
Michael
J.
White. That's two different people, buddy. Urkel loses to Michael J. White, okay?
Thank you. If they really wanted to me, I think if they really wanted to make it a prequel to the tournament, what it would have been maybe more interesting is give us the story of the Netherrealm, or, how it became, like, the, give us a story of that. Give us the history of that and the tournament before the real Mortal Kombat tournament. Maybe show us one of the tournaments or the 9 previous, or what the rules are.
They could have done that, and they didn't. could have done it, and they didn't. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know. But, is what it is. Hopefully you get a sequel. I do want to see more of it. But I'm not going to, kill them if they don't get a sequel.
All right, folks. Well, check out, put Mortal Kombat on in the background if you want to see it, or if you are a huge fan, then you should. I think it's a must watch for huge fans of the video games. All right, but let's move on to our next topic, and that is Godzilla versus Kong. I don't know why I'm yelling. Godzilla versus Kong came out. It came out a little while ago, at the end of March, I believe the 31st of March, and most of us were pretty excited and interested in this movie. I, for one, was amped up to see it as a huge fan. I know it's very trendy to call them kaiju movies now, but I'm a huge fan of monster movies, okay? So I was really looking forward to this, and my overall...
Sorry, that was very patronizing.
That's right.
Kaiju movies.
Do you mean kaiju movies? It's a big monster movie. Okay,
excuse me, Ryan of Asgard. You mean kaiju movies?
Yeah. Thanks for correcting me, idiot. Yeah. you know those people. Anyway, overall thoughts about the movie. I kid, folks. But overall thoughts about this movie, I would say. In similar fashion to what really Kervin and Steve were saying before, especially Steve, it's fun. It was fun. I think it was designed that way and written that way. I would say that Godzilla and versus Kong, for me, I had set my expectations low, and this movie met them. So I had a good time with it. Would I rate it? Would I rate it highly? No, I wouldn't rate it like super highly. There are little problems here and there that we can touch on, but overall I thought I enjoyed myself watching this film. Let's see. Steven from the House of L. Overall thoughts of Godzilla vs. Kong?
Yeah.
Did we wake you?
Are you just waking up?
Mom.
After watching Godzilla vs. Kong, you might be feeling that.
Mom, is there school today?
Listen, I liked Kong Skull Island for what it was. I liked the first Godzilla movie. Did I like Godzilla vs. King of Monsters? It was above average for me. There was stuff about it. But Godzilla vs. Kong, I was hoping for better than Godzilla vs. King of Monsters. And what I get? Not better. at least in my eyes. It was a fun watch, as I've mentioned previously with Mortal Kombat. The battles were good, as I mentioned in other parts of this podcast, because the fights are always the fights, and they're always good. The battles between Godzilla and Kong were good. There, I liked what we saw. Even their some of Godzilla's superpowers and weapons that were used by Kong. It was an interesting take on it. I think the little girl was interesting. Actually, I enjoyed seeing the little girl in the show. I mean, in the movie. I think she stole some of the scenes in there. Kong what? Looked great.
What just happened?
I was like,
I'm over here using on my transistors and buttons. I'm like, what was that? I don't understand.
It was my brain.
Does
like,
not compute.
Down thinking, brain shutting down thinking about Godzilla vs. Kong. That's how it's like. Kong visually looked great. And I'm of the things that overall thoughts. That's where I'm leaving it at. Okay. You can come back to me for the next points, I guess.
Okay. Kervin, your overall thoughts.
Overall thoughts, I thought it was entertaining. definitely, it was better than Mortal Kombat, if I had to choose between the two. So I was looking forward to it. I'm a huge Godzilla fan, you know. From
are you a kaiju obviously. Fan?
No, I'm a Godzilla fan.
I'm just teasing.
I'm a big monster fan.
So, oh, he's taking the middle road.
So I thought all of the scenes with Godzilla, whenever Godzilla and Kong were on screen, I thought they were all great scenes, mm-hmm. you know. And obviously, I heard about Robo Godzilla or Mecha Godzilla going to be in it, so it was good about finally seeing him. I thought it was a little strange how they connected it, how he came to be and what the source was for his power, but that's neither here nor there. In this movie, this was one of the movies that I was interested in seeing where I was like, why are they like, take the humans off the screen. I thought the acting was terrible. Like, I was like, let us just see the CGI monsters and just remove the humans. Cause even though there's actors that are really good actors or known for doing, you know, acceptable jobs, I thought it just seemed the dialogue and the acting seemed so rushed and just thrown together. So I was like, please just take all the humans off. Yeah, the little girl was fine, but take everybody else off and just give us more Godzilla and more King Kong, please. You know, like, so
I totally agree. That's why I'm laughing.
But that's my take on it.
All right. Thank you. I agree with basically everything you guys said pretty much, but that doesn't matter. Let's talk about favorite moments in this film. You know, let's start with Ryan of Asgard this time. I'm going to say, I can't really pick a favorite moment, man. I'm going to go back to what Kervin was saying. Anytime these two titans, kaiju, were on screen, I enjoyed it. And I enjoy the give and take to it, which it was... Godzilla, I felt, had the upper hand here. There wasn't much of a fair fight going. Not, it was a fair fight, but like King Kong was just getting outclassed at the end of the day, I felt. Although I loved what they did with King Kong as a character and design and all of that kind of stuff. So favorite moments, if I had to choose one, maybe I will say King Kong arriving in Hollow Earth was pretty interesting. It was something different that we haven't seen in many of these Godzilla or King Kong films before. So I like that. I like where that, if they're smart, I think that is a good direction to go in. So I like that they have that option. Let's hope that they do take advantage of that. And that would be, those are my favorite aspects, moments to this. Let's see, Steven from the House of El, your favorite moments.
Just when Kong and Godzilla were on screen together and fighting, that's it. I'm good.
Kervin, your favorite moments.
I would probably say when Godzilla is in Hollow Earth and he walks into that temple. I'm sorry, King Kong, because that reminds me of the temple that Godzilla found in the last movie.
Great. So
there's two different temples, you know, dedicated to these titans, or some people saw them as gods. So I thought that was probably my favorite scene, and him sitting on like his little throne with his axe. I thought that was really cool. I say little, but I thought that was cool.
Listen, plot holes, low moments, easy one. Kervin already alluded to this, and that's why I was laughing without muting myself. So I'm sorry about that. I have to say, anything with the humans. I was getting tired of the humans. You know, they were trying hard, honestly. I don't remember the actor's name right now off the top of my head, but he is going to be in Eternals, and he was our tinfoil hat wearer, right? He was like
conspiracy
man, basically, and he did a pretty good job. Let's see, Billy Bob Thornton. Sorry, I am tired, folks. You know what? I'm so sorry, because I think she's great. I enjoy her and everything that she does, and you know what? I'm a bad person for getting your name wrong, and I apologize.
Millie. Bobby.
Okay? Millie. Millie. You know, I think... No, but seriously, her... Please don't cancel the show. I think that her acting is good. Her acting was good in the previous one. I just think that the characters themselves weren't necessary... And some of the stuff they had the characters do, I laughed at. And a lot of these kaiju movies, a lot of these movies, the cheesier it is, the more I laugh and the more fun I have. You know, when they there's no way out of a situation, and there's like, wait, we found this power source that was hidden underneath the earth forever. We never knew it existed, and it can grant us, you know, like I laugh, but it's like, okay, cool. Like that's why I came. I want to have fun with this. But some of the hijinks that these kids were getting themselves involved in and then getting out of, and like, how did you not get crushed a million times? How did you find your dad in like, you know, Hong Kong? Like there is just certain aspects to it that I'm like, what? He's like, hey, I just got off the plane. What are you kids up to, kind of thing? And I'm just like, I don't know. I don't get that. You know, so there's a lot of that. And I agree with Kirby. I would love them to be bold going forward. And I'm, you know, if you guys are listening to this, please take notes on this, you know, because I think the fans would love to see a true monster, big monster movie, kaiju movie, whatever, where the focus is mainly on the monsters and less with the humans. Would it be expensive? Yes. But with the Hollow Earth idea in effect, the Hollow Earth is your oyster. You can just basically pluck characters from the previous movies and say that they were living there. I mean, it's tailor-made for it, and you can have the humans there for exposition. But I would love to see them go in deep on this and really make all monsters attack, or all out monster, or whatever they want to change it to, but have a movie similar to Godzilla, King of the Monsters, where you had, you know, 10 titans in there, or whatever, and we're just seeing all kinds of crazy stuff. That would be awesome, actually. But I digress. All right. let us move on to Kervin. Did you have anything else for plot holes?
Plot holes, like I don't want to be overtly critical, you know, and take away from like, oh, just enjoy the experience. But obviously, if you're looking at it, I didn't understand the fact that you spend billions of dollars on these anti-gravity ships to go into Hollow Earth and all this kind of stuff and these fancy spacesuits, but no one has a helmet. And no, and not once was it mentioned, oh, the air is breathable. You just open the door and walk outside. Like, I think in this era of the pandemic and viruses, you're going into a foreign environment and you just walk out there with no breathing apparatus or anything. You just assume everything's okay. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, they found out that this place even is like a real thing like 5 minutes ago. So it's just... I mean, yes.
And like, how much would it cost to throw that one line in there? Oh, systems say that the air is breathable. You know?
Exactly. Even if we're like, well, I don't know. But at least you thought about it.
You know?
That's true. Oh, man. Yeah. Again, this is maybe even more so than... Well, maybe not. But Mortal Kombat, yes. A lot of plot holes and low moments. I would say Godzilla versus Kong. If you really looked into it, there would be a lot of that too. Because... maybe they didn't expose themselves as much as something like Mortal Kombat, because you look at the fights with King Kong versus Godzilla. A lot of those fights, Godzilla should have outright won. You know, I mean, the first one, King Kong was going to die, basically, if the humans didn't help. So I don't know if it's a plot hole. It's probably, not the right term. But, you know, they had to have a movie. So at any rate, we need to move forward. And with our ratings of Godzilla versus Kong and
what the hell?
Did I not Oh my gosh, Steven from the House of L. I thought I had started with you for plot holes, but I'm sorry. I'm sorry?
No, you know what? I'm done. No, we could just go to the ratings because it was just Godzilla versus Kong. I'm good. Which
That was very country clubish. Like, it was very taken up.
Oh, really?
How dare please. You? You can.
Take this glove off.
No. Steven from the House of L, your low moments and or plot holes for Godzilla versus Kong.
As you guys, as we all kept saying Mortal Kombat, I'm just going to say Godzilla versus Kong. That was the plot hole for me. Yes, the people were the plot holes. They shouldn't. Mm. The only person that was good was the kid. The little kid, that was the only person in the whole movie was good. I don't get. We saw people from Godzilla vs. King of Monsters. Where are the people from the Kong Skull Island? They didn't show up. What happened to the guy that found the skull that somehow powers the Mecha Godzilla at the end of Godzilla vs. King of Monsters? And what happened to the freaking monsters from Godzilla King of Monsters that suddenly just disappear in Godzilla vs. Kong? That, like, Godzilla can't control them to attack Kong at any point, like, or in any way, or help them against Mechagodzilla. Like, suddenly they just disappear. No word about them, really, other than Godzilla controlled them. Like, huh? Really?
I totally agree. And I think they could have also shown at least a couple of monsters in Hollow Earth. Maybe, you know what I mean? Like, just to show you, like, this, what do you call it? Universe is continuing.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a big Godzilla fan. I like Kong more. So I didn't go in with big expectations into this. I went with higher expectations with Mortal Kombat because to me the trailer was good and it's Mortal Kombat. So I was like, with Godzilla vs. Kong, I wasn't happy. I actually thought Godzilla vs. King of Monsters was slightly better than this movie. It was just a fun watch, just to see, enjoy the fights between Godzilla vs. Kong. But even at times, it felt like the graphics when Godzilla was on screen just didn't look sharp compared to when Kong was on screen. But that's my thoughts. You know, that's where I'm at with it. To me, this movie was more of like, I guess, like a mix between Pacific Rim meets Journey to the Center of the Earth in one.
Okay. I think I kind of agree with you on many of your comments about low moments there. I would say I also agree that Godzilla King of Monsters, I got more enjoyment out of it. I felt like there were more epic scenes in that movie than in this one. But, you know, what are you going to do?
There's also more of a story there, and the people weren't actually there was a story for them. Here is just like, oh, we need this person here. We need this person here. Let's write something quick up just so they're on screen. I was like, really? Yeah. We just throw a dart on their faces and we just need them on the movie. I don't know.
Yeah, this is true. Well, for rating time, let's stay with Steven from the House of L on ratings for Godzilla versus Kong, sir.
How many geeks am I gonna send out of five to just go watch this movie on your mobile phone or on HBO Max or, you know, while you're flying in the airport?
Because you could have gone to the theater. I don't know if it's still out though. Right?
You could go to the could theater, have. I guess. I don't know if you want to waste money on that. Like, you know, to me, that's how, you know, yeah, 2.5 out of 5.
2.5 out of 5. So says Stephen from the House of L. Kervin, your rating.
I will give this 2.75.9 geeks out of 5. If I could take a page from Steven's book. Yeah, so it doesn't even get a solid whole number. You know what I mean? Okay. There's some decimals in there.
Yes.
That's it. I'm not going any further. That's it. That's all I got for this one. I
turned you to the dark side of ratings. To the dark side of the ratings.
I am going to send 3.89 kaijus to see this movie.
Wow.
Yes.
What? Oh, wow. That's higher than I expected from you.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, there it is, folks. Those are our ratings for Godzilla versus Kong. Do you have thoughts about it? Do you disagree with our ratings? Reach out to Geek Like Tendencies and let us know. Alrighty, let's move on here. We are approaching our end, but we are not yet finished, folks. We have a quick horror tidbit to share. Call this the Horror Corner, and we're going to try to give you some recommendations and, well, I will, some recommendations and different things as we go from episode to episode. Quickly, I want to recommend to you something you should check out on Shudder. It is a streaming service. Yep, I know, another one. but Shudder is actually the only place that you can find Creepshow, the TV series. You may remember that Creepshow had some movies back in the day. I think they made 3 films. The first one was the best one, arguably, and the second one, okay. I'm not too sure about that third one. But Creepshow, the TV series, it's available on Shudder, and they are up to season 2 now. They release their episodes each Thursday, and they're actually 2 episodes that are back-to-back, so they're kind of like 25 minutes each. And think back to Tales from the Crypt, Tales from the Dark Side, Twilight Zone, Monsters, any of those older shows where they lean on horror, but there's a bit of comedy dropped in there and a dose of maybe morality play, if you will. So usually someone gets their comeuppance, right? Something like that happens. Check out Creepshow, folks. All right, next on our agenda, we are, you know, before we wrap up, Geek Like Tendencies is a trio of your hosts, your humble hosts here that are watching a lot of content. You know, obviously hardworking men here, but you know, you got to relax sometimes. And one of those ways to relax is also to play video games, which is what we all love. We talked about Mortal Kombat earlier, and we all grew up playing that game and many others. Next gen systems are out. Hooray! Unfortunately, it is very difficult for people to get their hands on them. And I am going to step into the background here to let Stephen from the House of L and Kervin, the singular tribunal, to discuss what it's been like to try to secure a next-gen PlayStation or Xbox. Gentlemen.
Man, the struggle is real, ladies and gentlemen. Myself, personally, I've been having an extremely tough time trying to get my hands on a PS5. You know, if I'm not trying to, you know, pay, you know, these people that are using bots and everything else and then trying to resell it for like $1,000 or triple the price. I think at least 3 to 4 times a week, I'm following, you know, different people on Twitter who have, you know, insider information about when different companies like Best Buy and Walmart are doing the restocks. And every time I get, you know, some information and I get online and I'm waiting, you know, and I'm put in the queue and, you know, and all these, you make it right to the front of the line where you think, okay, in the next 5 minutes, I should be able to grab one and put it in my cart and then pay. Nope. Every single time it's, you get the, you know, what's the buzzer that, what's the famous buzzer of all the game shows? It's probably like, You could pick anything really. Wheel of Fortune
is one. The Gong. You have the
Deal or Deal or No Deal.
Like there's so many.
The Price is Right. Anything. Oh womp, man, womp.
Price is Wrong.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
That's
references.
That's a good movie reference. Yeah, it's like it's been very very frustrating. You know, for someone who is. I consider myself a lifelong gamer. I've been, you know, been a gaming system since, you know, the Atari and then first PlayStation, you know, NES, GameCube, Sega Master System. I've gone through, you know, a litany of systems. So now it's the next gen. I'm excited. Can't get my hands on it. This has never happened to me in all of the years of the new generation systems coming out. I've never found it so frustrating to be able to get my hands on the new device. So that's my take on it. And obviously the good fight continues, but you know, I'm starting to give up hope.
I'm Stephen from the House of L. You've also been trying to secure your own next gen system. What has your journey been like?
It's been hectic. It's been troublesome. I have to say I got lucky last week and was able to secure a PlayStation 5 and waiting for it to come in, thankfully. Hip hip hooray. Hey. but yeah, like, you know, I had a coworker that's been trying to get a PlayStation 5 and he's been like asking me if I could help him out. And I was like, yeah, I didn't want to follow these people, but if I find anything, I'll let you know. And then I got more invested into trying to find one for myself and him. So I started following some people on Twitter after doing some Google searching, and a couple of these guys, one Matt Swider, I'm just gonna call him out, and hopefully, you know, give them some props for helping me out. He works with Tech Raider and Jake Randall with his like letting us know when the drops are happening, and he has also got some YouTube videos out there to help you on your process of actually getting it to your cart and actually ordering the systems. And with their help, I was actually able to get in line on the queue and eventually able to secure my PlayStation 5. But it took a long time. You know, you're getting it in the cart in Best Buy, but then you can't get it at the store, or it doesn't ship at the store, or it's not at the store. You got to reclick it, and no stores in 250 miles have it, and then reclick again and it's there 2 seconds and it's not there. Like systems just don't work. What the hell? You know, we're looking for a next gen system, but the next gen internet system doesn't work, or whatever it is, to get the system, to get it into our carts and finally into our homes. But I was lucky, thankfully, but it's a pain in the ass, man. I've never seen a next gen for not only PlayStation 5, but even the Xbox being so hard to get. But again, you know, it's unfortunately, it's because of what happened this past year with COVID. You know, not as much was produced. And that's what the issue we're having. You know, they wanted everybody to have a PlayStation Xbox for Christmas of 2020. Well, good luck having it for 2021 of Christmas.
Yeah, listen, Sony execs, if you want to join an episode of this show, reach out to Geek Like Tendencies if you would like.
Yeah, please explain yourselves.
Yes,
jeez.
Explain me. Yeah,
and
I need
Microsoft, Sony or Microsoft. We're not gonna hate on Microsoft here too.
You have Sony a platform.
Yeah. Yep. Let us know what the issues are. We'll let it out. We'll, you know, free speech out here on Geek Like Tendencies.
I'm telling you, yeah, it's been quite a fight for these guys, and I haven't tried yet, so that's the only reason I'm not also venting. But I'm sure I will have trouble whenever I do try. And this is not limited to gaming systems. We know this is going on with other things that are whatever it is that's popular, really, whether it's sneakers or this or that, the next thing. It's been
at least toilet paper. You're able to find toilet paper now, and
I should hope so.
Supermarkets, you know. That was the next gen thing of last year.
Yeah, people, you know, I'm not even gonna touch that one. So, all right, folks. Well, this episode has gone down the tube, so we are.
Just wash your hands after listening to us, guys. Make sure it's at least 20 seconds. You know the rules.
Whoever thought that I'd get my vaccination appointments before people could get a video game system. Like,
oh my God, that's sheesh. A great one.
I don't know. Listen, we hope you enjoyed episode 37 of Geek-Like Tendencies. We went through a whole bunch of stuff. You guys got a lot of homework to do. Folks, any parting remarks? Kervin, any finishing move? No, any parting remarks? Too much MK for me this weekend.
Any fatalities? No. I will say I am watching the new Netflix series that just came out, Shadow and Bone. I'm just finished episode 2, so that one looks really interesting and promising if you're into, you know, the sci-fi magic, you know, kind of stories. So I would definitely recommend everyone watch that. And other than that, till next time, same GLT time, same GLT channel.
All right. Thank you, Kurtvin. Oh, before we go, Steven, super briefly, where can they find more Geek-Like Tendencies information if they're looking for us?
You can find us.
Is that your impersonation of the internet when you try to get PS5?
I am doing the opposite of briefly. Now, you can find us on geeklike-tendencies.com and social media on Instagram and Facebook at geeklike-tendencies. And you can email us at geeklike-tendencies@gmail.com and also find our podcast wherever you buy your local podcasts.
All right. Tell a friend to tell a friend, everybody. And that is it for this episode. Farewell, mortals.